Looking for something new to add to your queue? Acorn TV brings you new British dramas and thrilling mysteries you won't see anywhere else. Streaming on your favorite device, visit signup.acorn.tv and use code STORYTELLING for an extended 30-day trial. Acorn TV, world-class TV from Britain and beyond.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
My name is Ross Sutherland. I am currently standing in the Louvre Gallery in Paris, all on my own, talking into a microphone like that was a totally normal thing to do. I'm here because the BBC asked me to make a series about the mysterious boxer poet Arthur Craven, who lived here, not in the Louvre, but here in Paris between 1909 and 1915.
Man of fashion, chemist, whore, drunk, musician, laborer,
he's
painter, acrobat.
This literary hero that I never knew that I had.
Arthur Craven!
Arthur Craven.
The escape artist.
Monsieur Delaunay has a face like an inflamed pig.
Patron saint of the surrealists.
His colours have German accents.
Inventor of performance art.
Oh, asshole!
Fire the starting pistol for modernism.
To understand Dada, to even understand punk rock.
Yes! Arthur Craven!
Alternative comedy.
A little pose in front of the mirror.
Our most daring performers to date.
I write to anger my colleagues.
Cause a scandal in everything that he did.
You should have a look at Arthur Craven.
What a cunt!
Escape. In the last episode of this series, we saw Arthur Craven transitioning into a kind of proto-performance artist. Craven was taking the skills that he'd learned as a boxer, such as improvisation and psychological manipulation, and he was using those skills to turn himself into a kind of living artwork, transforming whatever space he was in into a slightly odd improvisational art happening. Arthur Craven wanted to play with reality, to provoke real emotion from people rather than intellectual chin scratching. Craven wanted art to feel real, to maybe even feel dangerous. Then, in August 1914, all of France started to feel a lot more dangerous. Germany declared war. The Louvre here immediately shut its doors, shipping 2,000 artworks immediately out to the provinces. This building was left as a shell. Art retreated from view. However, over in the 4th arrondissement, Arthur Craven remained open for business as usual.
Yes! Arthur Craven!
In August 1914, 2.9 million Frenchmen were mobilised to the front.
How do you relate to or deal with violence on a grand and unimaginable scale in the aesthetic?
One can be completely authentic and committed to a kind of aggressive madness.
Mad or suffering.
Craven continued to create and share his art.
There's definitely a correlation between the machine warfare and the wish to obliterate the past and create something entirely new.
Craven's performance style had always been combative. Craven versus cubism. Craven versus the audience. Surviving as an artist in wartime just required Arthur Craven to turn his art against a new enemy. Not the German army. No, joining the war effort would be almost certain death. Craven saw that. No, from this moment onwards, Craven turned his creative energy against anyone who would send him to war. From 1914 onwards, it was Craven versus conscription. In order to escape slaughter on the Western Front, Arthur Craven spent the last 4 years of his life perpetually on the run, hopping country to country, fleeing both the war and the authorities.
No one makes me march,
he once pronounced.
I will not march for their modern art, and I will not march for their great war.
Although Craven rejected the idea that he was a pacifist or a conscientious objector.
I don't object. They all may allow themselves to be murdered for aught I care. Only they need not expect me to follow suit.
Craven regarded the patriotism surrounding conscription as a form of crass theatre. And being a maker of crass theatre himself, Craven believed he understood these methods all too well. Arthur Craven had been a controversial art critic, a giver of scandalous lectures and improvised poetry readings. But then, from 1914 onwards, he began a series of illegal border crossings to flee the war.
Craven was a man who believed he was a citizen of like 20 countries. You know, he spoke multiple languages. Freedom of movement was really important to him.
This is poet and critic Sandeep Palmer.
That idealized vision of being a citizen of the world or being able to kind of remake yourself wherever you go becomes much more restricted. We see national borders being so much more important during the First World War. You almost can't imagine Craven being in that environment and being restricted in those ways.
Craven's success as a deserter often seemed to rely on his skills as an artist. Every border crossing required a creative solution. Craven's art, in a very literal sense, became his means of escape.
So I suppose there is this kind of great tradition in European literature and thinking that we focus around Baudelaire, Charles Baudelaire, the symbolist poet, of moving through space, of being the man of the crowd, the ephemeral, the fugitive, and the contingent is how he describes it. Just being someone who has no fixed destination, but can enjoy being lost in the multitudes.
Craven was always changing his backstory to suit his surroundings. And that can be useful when you're trying to illegally cross a border. I mean, I'm standing here in Louvre. I'm holding a microphone. I'm wearing headphones. I haven't asked for permission to record in here, but because I am recording, everyone assumes it's fine. In fact, there's a door ahead of me now that says privé, but I bet even if I was to just walk through here, here we go, and as long as you're holding a mic and you look as entitled as me, you can cross a boundary without permission. I just have to keep talking so people feel uncomfortable interrupting me. I'm just going to go back out this door here. And there we go. I've been trying to work out how to tell you the story of Arthur Craven's travels throughout the First World War. The best way I can think of is to focus in on four specific illegal border crossings that he made. Even if Craven himself didn't explicitly frame these crossings as artworks, these things are still perfect extensions of his creative work. They're little performances, all of them in some way playing with reality. So I want to give these, well, crimes, the artistic appreciation they deserve.
July 28th, 1914. After the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia. The following day, Austrian-Hungarian forces launch mortar attacks on Belgrade.
Craven is reported to have actually been in Belgrade when the shelling began. He was passing through the city on a boxing tour. It's befitting of a braggart like Craven that he met the First World War before it was famous.
Escape number one, Serbia to France.
Craven eventually managed to leave Belgrade during a four-hour ceasefire. Then he and his manager, who unfortunately only spoke German, slowly made their way home to France. They couldn't return the way they came, so instead they had to hustle their way home via Russia, Athens, Egypt, and Italy. Upon finally returning to Paris, Craven was nearly run through by a soldier's bayonet at the station. The soldier had heard Craven speaking German with his manager. Craven only managed to escape death by unleashing an obscene tirade of Parisian slang upon the soldier, immediately proving his French sovereignty. Turns out that Craven's time spent honing insults as an art critic paid off after all. Being an offensive poet literally saved his life. However, the reprieve was short-lived. Craven was returning to a country now at war, and France was already mobilising their reserves.
December 1915. Escape number two. France to Spain.
For his next trick, Craven took a page from Odysseus and Trojan horsed himself across the border into Spain, hiding in the luggage space of a car. One fable says it was the limousine of a wealthy heiress seduced by Craven. But yet again, within a few months of his arrival...
Any British subject now residing in Spain who is willing to serve in any capacity in His Majesty's forces should report himself to the nearest British consulate office.
Craven now turned his sights toward America, but an escape like that would need money. Craven needed to pull off his biggest performance yet. Thankfully, his idol, the boxer Jack Johnson, had just arrived in Spain.
Escape number three, Spain to America.
Johnson was the first African-American world heavyweight boxing champion. He fled the USA after skipping bail on a racially motivated police charge. Now in Spain, Johnson needed to drum up some new business. Arthur Craven answered the call. The fight was booked for the newly built open-air bullfighting ring in Barcelona. In the lead-up to the match, Craven planned media stunts at gymnasiums. There's film footage of diminutive boxers punching Craven in the stomach whilst Craven grins tall, unflinching. But a day of the fight, the Barcelona press were hailing Craven as the great white hope of boxing. Over 5,000 tickets had been sold. Craven used this new hype to charm the show promoter, secretly negotiating to increase the loser's fee. After all, Craven was not delusional. Craven could box, but he was stepping into the ring with someone who could destroy him in a heartbeat. It would have taken incredible courage for Craven to climb into the ring. Some reports say he was visibly shaking. Johnson drew the fight out to 6 rounds for the cameras, then quickly finished him off. The events inside the ring didn't matter. Craven got what he needed, collateral. Money he soon used to buy his way onto a steamer to New York. And yet, not long after his arrival in America...
April 6, 1917. United States Congress votes to declare war on Germany. All men between 21 and 31, native and foreign-born, must register for the draft.
Despite a flourishing romance with the poet Mina Loy, Craven was forced, once again, to perform his famous vanishing act. Craven crossed into Mexico, hitching all the way down to Mexico City. After a stack of begging letters, he was joined by Mina. They married soon after. Life was hand to mouth in Mexico. Mina became pregnant. There was no food, no work. They knew they had to keep moving. This time, onto Salina Cruz, a port town on the south coast, and the setting of Craven's final vanishing act.
Escape number four.
Craven and Mina pooled their remaining money and bought a rickety boat with a hole in its hull. The plan was to sail together to Chile, Valparaíso. Every day, Craven went down to the pier to work on the boat. As soon as it was shipshape, Craven volunteered to test it. Mina watched from the pier as Craven set off west into the Gulf. He was never seen again. The group waited as long as they could
but eventually they were forced to disperse. Mina took a berth aboard a passing Japanese hospital ship bound for Chile. By the time she arrived at her destination, armistice had been declared. And though Mina returned years later to search for Arthur, he nor his body were ever found. The Escape Artist, Episode 5, The Deserter, was written, presented and produced by me, Ross Sutherland. It was produced for the BBC by Melvin Rickaby. The voice of Arthur Craven was David Reed. Additional voices were by Lizzie Denning. The music was by Jeremy Wormsley.